Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. With summer upon us and the next phase of COVID restrictions being lifted, I thought what better time to get some tips and advice on fishing for bass. With some justification, Ireland has become known as the bass mecca of Europe and has regularly seen visitors from the UK, France and further afield visit these shores to fish for Irish sea bass. But are we in danger of exploiting these fish too much, and just why is it getting harder to catch them? For this week's episode, I speak to David Norman, a West Cork-based guide, who has vast experience in catching bass on fly and lure. With a background in windsurfing and the Navy, the call of the ocean has always been central to David's life, as I find out.
I was growing up on an estuary, and I managed to get hold of this second-hand pair of waders. God knows what age I was very young. And I was getting into places and situations I never should have been. Just out of sheer curiosity, going out around these massive mudflats, creeks and channels, and legendary stories about bait diggers sort of going out almost over the horizon to dig monster worms. And I just found it the most fascinating place, and I still do right to this day. An estuary to me is one of the most fascinating places you can be if you have half an idea of what you're looking at, you know.
Was your house nearby, that like it was within walking distance?
Yeah. And I even bought a house which was even slightly closer to the estuary, even though I wasn't doing much there at the time. But so moving on from there, I by pure chance, leaving school with very limited opportunities, joined the Navy. And I did 5 years in the Royal Navy. I lived on an aircraft carrier for 3.5 years, traveling around the world. Did have a rod with me, which I used to do little bits and pieces, but nothing serious. But yeah, so the Navy came to an end. And then not long after, windsurfing came along. And so I was back on the coast, and that brought me through until 2007, also brought me to Ireland. And that ultimately led to me settling here, you know.
It wasn't the fishing there that led you to settle. Obviously, your wife was Irish, but in terms of where you wanted to settle, in terms of the West Cork area, was it because of the windsurfing there? Was it the fishing? What led you there?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate. I was able to transfer with my day job, and there was a Dublin office and a Cork office, and I'd kind of coming from near London, I naturally assumed that I would settle in, try and transfer to Dublin and settle in Dublin. But my wife said the best thing she ever said to me, just out of the blue, she said, "I think you might be better off moving to Cork." And you know, when I look back, my life would have been a whole lot different had I moved to Dublin. But so there was the Cork office. It was on the southwest side of the city, and I knew if I had the chance and a clean sheet of paper, I wanted to live on the coast. So I looked at the map and I looked directly down from Cork and I saw Kinsale, and we'd all heard about Kinsale. And then I looked along the coast and I saw this town, Clonakilty, and I saw the main road running down from Cork. And I asked my wife, you know, if she knew anything about Clonakilty. She said, "No, not really, but I think it's sort of famous for music and a nice place." So we came over on a trip to kind of check it all out, and we came down to Kinsale, and it was really nice. We came along the coast, stunning piece of coastline, as you know, through your holiday location and onwards to Clonakilty. And we drove in a beautiful summer's evening, and we stayed in a lovely place, had a lovely meal, and I said, you know, this is the spot. This is the spot for me, you know. So that was it. We literally picked the place off the map, and it was perfect for windsurfing. And as it turns out, it's even more perfect for bass fishing.
Yeah, it's funny how it works out, isn't it? Like,
serendipity. Oh, totally.
Like you were fairly high level. You were doing competitions at windsurfing level. Mm. So you had a good feel for the ocean in terms of understanding, in terms of the waves and the wind and all that.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Were they skills then you were able to transfer into the fishing side of it?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I loved about windsurfing, that it was a lifestyle. You were constantly watching the forecast, ready to drop everything and go when the wind was basically the wind strength was in the right direction, the wind was from the right direction and of sufficient strength, and the tide was there or thereabouts right. And there'd be a fair amount of touring around, looking at spots, checking out conditions, and it was a lifestyle. And that's what always frustrated me about, say, going on a skiing holiday. You know, you go, you look forward to it for so long, and you meet these people that are living their whole lives out there, and before you know it, your week or 2 weeks are over, and you're back, and it's just gone until the next time you can go. So to have a sport like windsurfing that was, as I say, a complete lifestyle, that really appealed to me. So there is a real crossover between that and bass fishing because it's so condition driven.
So you gave up the windsurfing. Was it a lot to do with kind of the body, age? You know, it's kind of a younger person sport.
Yeah, I thought I'd be windsurfing until I was probably about 50, and I had to stop at 40. And it's just, if you've got any injuries, the windsurfing, like, in way on a lake is probably, you know, quite genteel, but if you're windsurfing out on the open sea in wave conditions, storm force winds, and you're hammering out and a wave walls up in front of you, you're going up, and if you come down and land that board flat rather than kind of tail first, the impact that goes up through your legs into your back is enormous. And even just carrying the equipment around, if you've got any weakness in your back, you're going to know all about it. And it got to the point where I was, 2 or 3 days afterwards, I was still aching and not in a good way. So I kind of just had to draw a line under it, and, you know, no complaints either, you know.
And was it a conscious then decision when you discovered bass fishing, shall we say, in 2007, that you said, right, this is going to be my new poison, so to speak?
Not really, no. It was really difficult at first, but I knew I loved being on the coast, and you know, it just kind of slowly started to fill the gap, and a little bit of success, and a little bit more information. And it certainly wasn't instant, but I really did appreciate being back on the coast.
Yeah, I get that sense. It's being out on the ocean is for you, out on the coast is the key, like, isn't it? Like, being able to spend that time. Like, so I presume then you had you were having to learn on the job, plenty of blank days, trying to figure out what was working, what wasn't.
Oh, I think it took me about 2 months of a lot of effort. And don't forget, at that time, bass were, you know, a bit more plentiful than they are now. And it took me a long, hard effort to get the first fish. And I distinctly remember where it was. It was a spot that you and I fished together. And, you know, I remember every detail about it, and excitement was just incredible. And and it took me a long time to get another one after that. So it was really tough. I mean, I was going into tackle shops, you know, and they were kind of starting to feel sorry for me at one point. It was that difficult. But bit by bit, it kind of, you know, success starts to come.
And was it a lot more underdeveloped, bass fishing side of things, in Ireland then?
Yeah, it was just about to kick off in a big way with the introduction of Japanese tackle that they were using for other species, and the French anglers started to adopt these, what we would now call modern bass fishing. And that was all just about to happen. And when I could start to see all this coming down the tracks, I went down in 2009. And at that point, I'd fished straight through 2 winters with very primitive tackle, long bendy rods, monofilament reels, very primitive metal lures. But I was just enjoying it so much, just being out there. There was absolutely no chance I was going to catch. But I stayed out there. And then, as I say, in 2009, Jim Hendrick down in Wexford yep. was offering workshops, and he was way ahead of the game. And so I went down to him for a workshop, and that just catapulted my kind of knowledge and enthusiasm to a whole new level.
Is lure fishing your number one go-to? Like you do fly as well, but
yeah, lure yeah, it be... is. It is. And I said, I would have expected, had bass fishing remained stable or improved in line with our knowledge and tackle, I would have expected to be fly fishing possibly full-time from about, say, even 5 years ago. Mm. But because it's got progressively harder, I'm not willing to put when I go fishing, I want a better level of result than, for me, bass fly will deliver at the moment. But that said, like other species, like mullet, I'd be 100% fly fishing. Pollock, 100% fly fishing. It's just the way bass fishing is. I need a little bit more return for my effort, but I absolutely love fly fishing.
Tell me about that, David, in terms of how the bass numbers have changed. Like we're a lot more aware of the drastic reduction in what's happening in terms of the Atlantic salmon.
Yeah.
But maybe the bass fishing is kind of not getting as much of a profile on it.
Yeah. So this is one of my pet subjects. So, so basically over the course of about 10 years, if you take it from the time I did a workshop with Jim. So where are we at then? 2009. So it's 11 years. But so the curve was kind of get better and better equipment, become more and more knowledgeable, discover more and more locations and catch more fish. And then it reached a point where it kind of plateaued and started dropping off. And the equipment was continuing to get better. We were continuing to get more knowledgeable. We were discovering more spots. We were catching less fish, and it just got harder and harder until I remember sort of a little bit of a number of, I was averaging in perfect conditions, excellent local knowledge, everything looking right. I was starting to average about a fish every 4 hours on lures, which is a very poor return. And other people were recording, you know, similar poor numbers. So logically, as you alluded to in the question, you'd assume that they weren't there. The bass had gone, and I was as strong a believer in that as anybody else. But then I started to have experiences that made me question that, and people, other people around the sport were talking about behavioural changes, and The conclusion I'm coming to more now is that partly through angling pressure and maybe even partly through catch and release, which is definitely the right thing to do, they started to wise up.
So do you think it's a case that the numbers are still there, that they're not, there's climate change?
I'll give an example. Fishing one of the estuary channels here, I'm not quite sure when it was, but it was in the early days of... I got into fishing soft plastics, weedless soft plastics, before most people around the UK and Ireland, because of the specific weed problem we have here in the channels in Inchdonny. And early on, when I started fishing these weedless soft plastics that I was buying from Japan and North America, I got onto a set of tides, and I had, over the course of a week, I had 50 bass up to 8.5 pounds. And currently, to this day, if I went out there now and did exactly the same thing on the same tides, I'd be really pleased to pick up a fish, maybe two. But what brought home the whole situation to me was that your friend of mine, Peter Aspinall.
Mm.
Now, I've had a situation where I'm fishing at one end of the estuary, doing exactly the right things at the right times and getting nothing for my return. Whereas Peter is fishing a mile up the estuary, float fishing live sand eel, and getting 8 or 10 fish.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So what do you put it down to? Logic says.
I think they've wised up. I think they've wised up. They've started to see. When you think about it in terms of the life of bass in this country. They've been seeing modern lures now for about 10 years, maybe more. And they're a pretty poor imitation for the real thing, no matter how good they are. Even if they cost 20 or 30 euros, at the end of the day, they're still a piece of plastic. And it's just, that's the conclusion that I'm at the moment.
But, would that be a commonly held one as well, David, within the bass fishing?
I've heard it from one or two people whose opinions I would respect. And initially I dismissed it.
Yeah.
Completely dismissed it. But I've heard it in other parts of the world. That's my opinion currently. And the only problem with bass fishing, it is easy to balance this bit. It is easy to disappear down your own rabbit hole a bit, in that you do certain things in a certain way and you get some success and you build on that success and you head in a certain direction. And it's pretty difficult to unravel that and start from scratch again with a clean sheet of paper. So, you know, somebody else approaching things totally differently might find another avenue of success. But I can only talk about my own experiences, and I fish every lure there is on the market, and I fish every method there is available. That's where I'm, that's the opinion I'm of at the moment. But if you ask me in a year's time, I might have a different opinion.
You hope.
But that's actually a big part of it, because it's constantly evolving.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a jigsaw constantly being figured out. Like, tell me this, so that's part of, then you've really turned your focus and attention to night fishing now.
Yeah.
Like, because is that because it's a way to kind of overcome in terms of the angling pressure, in terms of the bass are less shy? Is that the solution you found for now?
Well, interestingly, and the bad news is even the night fishing is getting more difficult.
Jeez.
Yeah. So just quickly on night fishing, the reason it kind of started for me, and again, it was a long time before I think most people would sort of cottoned onto it around the UK and Ireland. I have a local friend here, very good angler, and he had a young family, and he was kind of going night fishing because he really didn't have any other time to go. And again, I distinctly remember one evening where I fished perfect conditions, you know, good knowledge, right things in the right places from, say, 8 till 10 in the evening. And caught nothing. I spoke to him the following day, or even later that evening. He fished from 10 till 12, had 3 or 4 fish. Change of light being at 10 o'clock. So, you know, it suddenly became obvious that, you know, if you were willing to wait, and if you were willing and able to fish in darkness, then it was gonna be a lot more productive. So that's all that how all that started, you know. But
you're seeing it now because, like, I've been fishing with you. The night fishing is an incredible experience, and the fish to be caught, definitely. But that scared me now that you're actually saying, you know, you're seeing it's becoming less productive as well.
Yeah. I think angling pressure is definitely a big part of it, and it only even takes it's minimal. They're definitely not silly. If too many fish are caught and released at a certain location, they just won't be there. I would almost say if you find good fishing, you can start the clock ticking before you notice a decline. And that's, I mean, I have locations I know nobody else fishes, and I can see them going downhill slowly but surely.
As soon as you start catching.
Yeah, over a period of time, you know, this is over a period of years.
Yeah.
I mean, my father-in-law used to come back every summer, and I'd take him off to the latest hotspot, and we had some great fishing. And eventually we switched to night fishing. We would walk down the beach at night, and I'd say to him, what side do you want? Do you want the left or the right? You know, or you'd say, oh, I'll pick the right. So I would go to the left and cast across the rocks, and bang. You know, there'll be a fish, and then he'd get one, and I'd get one, and then I'd put my rod down because I was handling his fish, and it was that level of activity. I remember I would get to the point where I'd get to, say, 6 or 7 fish pretty quickly. I'd say, okay, I'd look at my watch, and know I've got work the next day, so okay, I'll just get 10, and then I'll go home. And I'll get to 10 pretty quickly. I'll go, okay, I'll get to 15, and then You know, I'd get to 15 and say, no, look, I really have to go home.
And let's not forget, this is not 20, 30 years ago you're talking about. No. That was the last 10 years, like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just wondering whether Catch and Release is a mass education program.
It's university for the boss, like.
Well, I mean, I'd love to talk to people from other walks of fishing life where, you know, there's a similar culture, you know, to find out from people that have seen it in other species or not. But they're pretty smart. I mean, I can tell you that if I'm on a particular location, I've caught, say, two or three fish, and then it suddenly goes quiet, completely dead. I think, okay, well, that's a number of times I'd walk away and think, well, that's the end of that. But then on occasions, I just change my lure and I start catching again. Two or three fish, it'll go dead. Change my lure, start catching again. So they just wise up incredibly quickly. And you just think, yeah.
But you've now, you've gone into kayak fishing now, even as a means to try and get out further, kind of away from the pressure and what bass have seen or other fish have seen close in. You're finding success with that?
I mean, there's still... Don't get me wrong, there's still really good fishing to be had from the shore. The night fishing is really good if you have the skill set and the confidence to do it. You need to be a very confident shore angler before you should even think about attempting night fishing, and the safety side of it is a whole nother level. But the kayak side of things, it just, on the back of a trip to Cape Cod, which I'm sure we'll talk about, I did a trip over there with a guide who specializes on going out with the tide onto massive sand flats and fishing the incoming tide. And I did a number of trips with him. And then I kind of had a penny drop moment when I thought, hang on, like in a different kind of way, I could use a kayak here to explore the estuaries, which I did. And I did a year of that. And that was pretty incredible, 2018. Then last year I started heading out off the coast. And started to quickly find, you know, good fishing middle of the day.
So is it a case because you're finding these spots that aren't being regularly fished, basically?
I don't know. I mean, as I say, I'm constantly trying to piece it together. It's really hard to say. It's very early days with the kayak side of things, but it just opens up a whole other world. And I spent a lot of time fishing from boats last summer in here and in France and in the US, and it further reinforced for me the fact that boat fishing doesn't have to mean, you know, big heavy leads and bait and charter boats. You know, there is a crossover between the shore fishing, bass fishing skills, and near inshore fishing, whether it be from, you know, some form of craft or in my case a kayak. And again, I just love being out on the sea. So it's kind of a win-win, really.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like you're saying, you're always kind of trying to evolve and look for kind of, you know, that extra few percentage, isn't it? You're trying to kind of outsmart them all the time. Like, and, you know, like you said, maybe it's craft boats now or whatever. And there's a lot to be learned, I suppose, from, tell me about, in terms of the striper bass fishing over in the east coast of America. You've gone over a couple of times now, haven't you?
I've done four trips over there now. Yeah.
In case people aren't aware of it, maybe you might just give us a bit of background to kind of that cult, nearly, or the pilgrimage that people make for this.
Yeah. So the northeast of North America, from Maine to Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York, and right that top northeast corner, right down as far as, I think Maryland is on the north of the Chesapeake Bay. They have the striped bass, which is, if you think of our bass and multiply the biggest bass you've ever seen up to about four times, so up to like 60, 70 pounds, and put seven dark stripes around down the side of it. They're pretty much identical, but potentially much bigger. And as you say, it's a huge, it's a cult there. It's part of the culture. I mean, the striped bass is on flags and crests and on top of government buildings. It's just it's a huge cultural icon over there. And to give you some idea of the number of people that are fishing for them, they have a saltwater license over there. And in those northeast states, I believe there's 13 million saltwater licenses sold each year. But it is really part of the culture, and families go and fish together, and you've got the hardcore lunatics and you've got the weekend warriors. But, you know, it's such a big part of the culture over there.
My next question is going to be, you know, we talk about angling pressure over here in Ireland, and you're telling me about 13 million licenses being sold.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, surely angling pressure over there is a big thing?
Yeah. So working backwards, striped bass are currently in big trouble. They're introducing new tight restrictions on what fish can be kept. They've introduced a slot size, and everyone's got a different opinion on it. But some legendary striped bass spots, such as the spot called Montauk, which is at the end of a long peninsula, they're having competitions there. They're hardly catching a striper at peak season. So they're in trouble, and similar to here in Ireland, they nearly wiped them out back in the 80s. They had to have a complete moratorium to bring them back, and luckily they did come back, but sadly they're in trouble again. But the culture over there was very much catch and keep with the older generation. But now the catch and release ethos is very strong over there. So, in terms of how much more difficult it's become there, I'm not really sure. You'd have to talk to someone from over there that's sort of seen it over the years. But
you've had great experiences when you've gone over fishing there, haven't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I would say is that the biomass over there is enormous.
Yeah.
It's a massive, massive population of fish, a range of sizes, whereas we don't have those sort of numbers here. But yeah, I've had a great time going over there, and I look forward to doing it many, many more times, hopefully.
What's the main run like that people go over for?
Well, they're an unusual species, or different to our species, in that they come into fresh water to spawn in the massive estuaries of the northeast coast. And then they have what's called the run, the striper run, the spring run, where they all head north from these big estuaries up to through and around the Cape Cod area, right up to Maine. And then in the autumn, there's the fall run, where they all basically retreat back down to the spots that they've come from for winter. But so the spring run's very productive. And then there's certain times throughout the summer where it all revolves around the bait. So the bait being bait fish species such as mackerel, and there's another species over there called bunker, and big sand eels, and basically anything they can find to eat. But they're following the big fish are following the big bait, and that's the key to it in an absolute nutshell.
Fly fishing is popular as part of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely. But because they've got this massive biomass, they've got millions of schoolie sized fish, which could be up to 6 or 8 pounds, 10 pounds even, and they'd still be considered schoolies. But they're ideal for fly fishing. And they're in close. And if we had a bass population here like they did, then I'd be fly fishing full time. So it's perfect for fly fishing. And it's popular, and it's getting way more popular as well.
I recommend anybody to watch Running the Coast.
Absolutely.
It just gives you a real sense of it, what it is, and whets your appetite. You want to
go
over and take part in it.
Absolutely.
Before I finish up, David, I just want to ask, bass fishing in Ireland is, you still think it's summertime, it's people out on the coast during the day, maybe early morning or evening, around the tides. Is there anything you'd recommend in terms of how can people increase their chances?
It's difficult. There are no kind of real shortcuts other than getting some instruction or getting some guiding or teaming up with someone who's further up the learning curve. But you kind of have to serve your time to a point. And basically it's about, as you said earlier, it's about cracking that code, and bass are very habitual. They'll get into certain routines, and if you can stumble upon one of those routines and then start to piece it together, you can start to have a reasonable level of success. But it does take a lot of time and effort. I'd say, you know, there's some basic things you can do. I mean, you need to go and look at, if you think a location's a good location for bass, first of all, go and look at it on a spring low tide. That's spring tides happen twice a month. So go and look at the location at super low tide and look at the features, and then go back at high tide or whenever you think that location should produce fish. And if they're there, you'll find out reasonably quickly. If you're doing like somewhere near the right sort of things, you'll find out reasonably quickly. And if it doesn't work, then move on to somewhere else. Cover a lot of ground. And if you do have some success, absolutely make a record of it, either in your head or better still, write it down, because you've just stumbled upon a piece of the puzzle and then it's building from there.
Be prepared to put in be prepared for the blank days, put in the hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that is part of it. And that's why success is all the sweeter when it comes along. And there's a huge amount of information out there now. There's a lot of people bass fishing. It used to be all around blogs and forums. It's now more around Facebook and Instagram to a point, although that's more sort of photo oriented. But buddy up with somebody or two or three people. You know, share a bit of information amongst yourselves. Don't broadcast what you're doing on social media. Respect the coast. Respect the fish, and if you're passionate enough about it and you want to put the time in, you will start to get some success, and you can build on that success.
Or else hire a guide. That's my answer.
Yeah, absolutely. But hiring a guide, as you know, is not just about someone taking you to the fish. They'll give you knowledge that you can take away afterwards and apply it. You know where you come from. They'll probably help you with tips and advice, even if you're away, if you make that contact, they'll more than likely support your fishing if they think you're going about it in the right sort of way.
Well, for me, a session with a good guide is an education.
Absolutely.
Fishing is part of it, but you come away with something longer in terms of information and perspective and advice on it. David, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. It's been absolutely fascinating insights into the development of bass fishing over the last years and maybe what way it's going to be going in the future. I'd highly recommend people check out David. You're on Facebook and Instagram, West Cork Bass, is it?
That's right.
Check you out on social media. Loads of great photos and information there as well. David Norman, thanks a million for talking to me, and I do hope we can get out again over the summer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, my pleasure, Daria.
My thanks to David Norman for joining me on this week's show. And to find out more about David's guiding services, you can contact him on Facebook and Instagram at West Cork Bass. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date on Instagram at Ireland on the Fly, and I'll be back next week with another episode from Ireland on the Fly. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.